Yona is going to be all these people. Vasiliki is actually here,
yep.
But Caroline, William, and Sophie Park are not. So, Fiona Stevens.
Oh,
no.
I got one. Oh,
okay.
Maybe we better get
I guess
first.
We're not busy here, all right.
Anyway.
And don't forget, Fiona, to project your voice.
No, okay. So I'm going to talk about this idea of medical disposal, so the management of medical disposal in some work we've been doing in accident emergency care. And I'm looking at the moment about interactions between junior doctors and consultants. Okay? If you can't hear me, just stick your hand up and I'll be louder. So just to give you a bit of background, so junior doctors may be perceived, particularly by their more senior colleagues, to be a barrier to the efficient and the timely movement of patients through accident emergency departments. There's a lot of political pressure on this idea about how do people get moved through in a timely fashion. And so this is how this project came about. And I was interested in the idea then, once we've got our data in, of this idea of medical disposals that Berg talked about in 1982. So he talked about the fact that in transforming a patient's problem to something that's solvable, you're not just combining this idea of cognitive items, so it's not that kind of textbook movement through what's wrong with somebody and therefore this is going to be the solution, but you're actively articulating these heterogeneous elements alongside the transformation. So in terms of what I want to talk about today, I'm interested in what these elements might be and how they're being articulated in consultations. But I'm not looking at the consultation between the doctor and the patient. I'm interested in this professional talk between the junior doctors and the consultants, which I see as some kind of key site for how these things happen, how it moves forward, for various reasons. So I'm using video recorded cases from accident emergency departments, and as I say, interested in the way we move to this idea of disposal. And I'm using the idea of disposal to say, how do we get to things like referrals, a prescription, a discharge. So these are the points at which somebody can move away, move out of the department. And when I say out, it's not necessarily physically out. It's being able to say, this is what's happening, and you're no longer, once we've done these, under the care of the accident emergency team. So in the UK, we have this idea of a 4-hour wait. If patients are not moved out of the emergency department within 4 hours, then the trust gets fined, the department's being fined for this. So there's a real institutional pressure to keep these people moving through. And at these points of referral, of the prescription and of the actual discharge out of the department, that's the point at which this clock stops. So the clock is really important in all of this. So what I'm going to do today is talk about the various ways in which we move towards disposal and how it's being managed between the consultants and juniors. But I also want to talk a little bit to the orientation to educational and organisational goals. Junior doctors are a training grade, so in the last presentation you talked about it being a similar kind of level. These two aren't. Juniors are what's called here F2, so they've graduated as doctors, they are doctors, they're in their second year of their training. So they have to do these training and then they specialise after that. So they're at least a year passing their degree, but they're still very much a training grade and they're on a 6-month placement. And the point at which we videoed them are at the end, towards the last couple of months of them and the very beginning of the next phase. I'm going to talk about how the idea of talk about disposal is actually initiated, so the way in which they move towards this talk and who does it, how it's responded to, and as I say, finish off talking a little bit about education and the kind of structural constraints that you can see reflected in the talk. So, unsurprisingly, the initiation of talk about disposal is generally initiated by the consultant, usually based on the idea of a summing up of what they've been told and then often selecting the detail from the presentation by the junior to move it towards an idea of this is what is relevant to move this patient through. So if you look at just at extract one, I'm now going to play. If I can please be yes, it's not very clear. Do you want me to play that again so it wasn't very loud? But it might be better.
Yes.
So she said he's talking, so the consultant is summing up, so you've had she's had three falls in less than one day. And they get a so probably, and the junior actually comes into this and adds some kind of collab, can see where it's going and adds extra information here. So she lives alone, allowing the consultant to come in with, that's unsafe, and we get this idea of the indication of admission. What I think is interesting in all of these is that we get this idea of probably. You don't get this idea of this is what should happen. It's very much phased as a kind of probably what should move forward. But that's taken as the next step is to move to the medic. So that's what's then taken up by the junior. We also have this idea of the plan. And this appears a few times. So instead of it just being a kind of summing up by the consultant, there's a move towards getting the junior to move towards an idea about what are they going to do. So it's a kind of beginning of a passing of responsibility over. And it allows the junior to actually then say what they think should then happen next. So again, I'll just play these. These aren't, because the department was very difficult to video in, they're not necessarily very
clear. Plan is a CT. Yeah.
And then ask her, please,
it's very brief. So your plan is a CT of the brain, which is this idea coming in from the consultant. And then it allows the junior to say, this is what we're going to do. Colleagues in stroke to also see us. That's a really common expression. When they refer, it's always this kind of colleagues in. That's the way in which it's done. And then we do have an example to show you where it's the junior that actually initiates this kind of idea of a move towards disposal. And it's quite interesting how it's done. It's done much more in terms of a kind of idea about how we would move towards it, of a kind of move towards what are we going to do next. And that's your extract three, where they're talking about the situation that the patient is in, their kind of social situation. A lot of, just to say, the department we actually recorded these in had a very elderly population coming in. There were an awful lot of issues around community care and quite a lot of about how we manage both medical and social issues. So social issues were really big in our data. So if I just play this, and this is actually a geriatrician rather than an A&E.
He seems to be able to
it's really quite hard, but the geriatrician says, are the family looking after her, or... Well, she's got a daughter, but her daughter doesn't seem to be able to look after her. I mean, I wouldn't feel comfortable with this woman going home. This kind of, but I think it's quite interesting with the hesitation towards the, I wouldn't feel comfortable, because this is a shift, this is almost a shift into the consultant's kind of territory about at what point we move forward in this. In terms of how these ideas of disposal get responded to, often what we get is these kind of agreements. So often they don't actually do anything. The junior just says, yes, okay, fine, let's move towards it. If you look at extract four, there is this idea of a recognition of a movement towards where it's going, I think, and a movement towards this summing up and a kind of support with this, where this idea of... reiteration of what's actually happening. So in extract four, the consultant is saying my only concern, so it's somebody who's got back pain but they can't find a reason for it. Says my only concern is after he's had 10 milligrams of morphine, and then something about the diazepine, which is quite hard to hear, it's still not improving. And at this point the junior comes in, we can see what's going to happen here, and we've got an overlap, it's still not improving. You can't lift it later off the bed. So we've got these cases. The case is being developed. It's being pulled together. He still can't do it. The evidence is building here, and he can't. Then the authors could see him. So it's going to go to an orthopaedic referral. And I think this is quite nice, because often what we get is just these yeahs. But this one, there's a kind of move towards a kind of collaboration. I can see where this is going. Interestingly, in the earlier part, the junior was quite thrown by this person. The actual communication between the patient, well, actually the patient's wife, this patient had been left for hours lying on the bed, couldn't move. The wife was getting more and more upset. The wife was determined something was going to happen and had asked for the junior doctor's phone number, her name, and put it into her personal mobile phone. The junior's saying, I'm coming off shift, and she's saying, I still want your name. And that starts the consultation, saying, and she's put my name in her phone. So there's a lot of tension around this, but the junior's very stuck between saying, actually, I can't find a reason to admit this person, but I'm going to be held culpable in lots of ways for this. So it was quite an interesting example. The next one, I think I really like this next extract because it's the idea that the junior is displaying competence. Now, as I said, these juniors are generally in the first couple of years of training coming out. This particular one was slightly older, and he'd been in the army previous to coming into community medicine, much more confident. And his route wasn't quite the same. I can never quite understand what happened, but he was much more confident and obviously really wanted to be seen as a competent as doctor, felt much more experienced, and he was doing a longer run in accident emergency. He wasn't just doing these 6 months, he was staying there for longer and wanted to specialise. So in this case, he really did, this is where he really seems to show competence in terms of what he's done, and I quite like the way he does it.
I would say in this age group as two equals, so suggesting that if you do a thorough by two equals.
Exactly.
Is that different?
I think it's exactly the same.
Fine. Okay. Have you got any other patients?
Alright.
Thank you.
The other one, I've already.
So if you look at the extract 5, so we've got this first bit by the consultant. Which is very much following referral, this idea of a two-week rule, which is when they send them back into general practice to come in for what is probably going to be a cancer, which will be into oncology, but it's not actually said here. What I like is these points which he comes in. So at line 5, the junior doctor comes in with exactly, and the consultant's ill, and he's coming, and he comes in again at line 8, I'm thinking exact, and he gets interrupted again, and then he gets the whole thing out at line 11, so I'm thinking exactly the same. This is a real kind of display of, this is what I think should happen. And I knew what this should be. And then I like the way, I've given you the rest of it, because I really like the way he comes back with it. Have you got any other patients? And they've just come in, meaning we haven't got as far as saying what's going to happen now. But he does then say in line 22, line 22, 93, I've seen them discharge them. And we get a no discharge. So it's a kind of, I do know what I'm doing here. I've seen people, I've discharged them. I've come to you here, because I just need to decide what's happening with this patient, but I did know what it was. It's just a confirmatory. You don't have to tell me what to do. I just wanted to check where we were going. Fitting in very nicely with the last presentation about antibiotics is my next one, where the junior doctor seeks clarification of what should happen. So somebody who's come in with various different symptoms, including psychological issues and social issues, and a long kind of presentation of the case, and what the consultant chooses to focus on is this idea of infection, whether she has an infection or not. This woman's already been treated for 8 days with an antibiotic, and she's still got a cough. And so we have this idea about what should happen next. What she says they need a chest x-ray, which the junior has already said, I'm sending for a chest x-ray, but keeps coming back. I keep reiterating, needs a chest x-ray. And she said, well, I've sent the paperwork, I'm just waiting for this to come. But there's this kind of idea about what should happen if it's clear, which the junior doesn't think is clear. So I'll play you this and I'll talk a bit more about it. point. Oh, no, I don't know if I can do it.
From the INR result, and if there's evidence of an infection of chest X-ray, you treat it. If there's no evidence of a chest X-ray,
should we still give her antibiotics?
I think even if she's got clear chest X-ray, she's got antibiotics. However, if she's got a clear chest X-ray, then we should treat her with an organ with an antibiotic that can affect the problems, like erythromycin.
So we've had this idea of chest X-ray confirming an INR, that's just something else that's going on. And then if there's evidence of chest infection, we'll treat it. There's no evidence of chest X-ray, and then there's a pause. I mean, she's coming in quite quietly, but saying, you know, should we give her still? What do I do with this person? I've got this person, got the chest X-ray. Actually, she's had antibiotics. I don't think this is going to be a bacterial infection. It's not going to respond. So you're telling me to do chest X-ray, but what am I going to do if that doesn't happen? Should we give her still? And he, you know, there's a lot of repair in here, and it's some air, and I beg your pardon, and she repeats again, should we give her some antibiotics? Because she's had, and that's an overlap, because she's had 8 days of. And then he comes out with this, even if she's had a clear chest X-ray, we should give her antibiotics. Knowing that that doesn't clinically necessarily, there's no reason to do that, and that's why we get the help. However, if she's got it, then we'll just give her an organism that's covering atypicals, and then we get two different types of drugs there. Which is really interesting, because there is a potential challenge. I see this as a challenge to what should we do. So I think it's a kind of informational thing, but I think there is something there about, she's already had it, what do we do? And now you're telling me we're going to put antibiotics in here. I mean, she doesn't take it any further than that. And I think it is something about the differential in terms of where they are in the organisation structure. But I think it's a very interesting way it's done, with this repeat of the, I want this clarified, kind of, you know, what am I going to do? And actually, that is a challenge towards the, what is the correct thing to do, particularly as what comes up at the end, although she doesn't challenge there, is I would suspect, we don't know what the original antibiotic was, I suspect it was the same as one of these atypicals, these ones that cover everything. So she hasn't got something particular to do. I want to talk to you a bit about education, because these are a junior training grade, and I'm really interested in how the education becomes part of it. So there's a real tension between what's going on in the consultations in terms of service delivery alongside the education role that has to happen. I think there are two ways in which education is happening, one of which is the education is very integrated to it, into the service delivery, so just providing more information than you may have done if someone just asked you an opinion. So if you're a colleague at the same level asked an opinion, and we can see it in where juniors talk to each other, they don't give the explanation, so this is what I'm doing. And then these ideas we've already talked about known answer questioning, where the education is very explicit in it.
About
so
5 minutes ago.
How much? Five?
Five.
Okay, this should be all. This is actually an earlier part from one I showed you earlier.
So, if that's the basal infarctum and apoptosis, setting, then we need to look at the disease, and then this is essentially a change of biopilot that requires investigation. Is that by the GP? I would say in this age group, that's 2 week old. So suggesting for the GP or a fellow by 2 week old.
So basically, this is someone who's come suggesting that they haven't actually been to the toilet for 2 weeks. And there is some kind of thing over whether that really was happening, and whether actually he's taking so much Mobicol that actually it's no solid passing, it's just liquid, but anyway. But the idea is that he's had these examinations. They're very keen on doing rectal examinations in all of our data, none of which, luckily, we do have one on tape that we would rather not have on tape, but it's there anyway. So they talk about the idea that there's an empty rectum, and what does it mean? So is it the fact that stuff's stuck up high, or is it that actually everything's passed through? So there's this kind of what is wrong with this person. So this idea about which way do we go? Is it inflammatory disease, in which case it needs to go to outpatients here, direct referral to outpatients, or does it, is it cancer, basically, which they don't say, but that's what it's getting to, therefore it has to go via the GP. So what is interesting in this is it's just the pathways they're referring to. But it's, there's a lot of detail here about what means you go to a different pathway. How does it fit into the organisational structure of medicine? So basically, you need to decide which way we're going. And that is the one where previously the junior was kept saying, yes, exactly what I was thinking, exactly what I was thinking. And then I'm going to show you the one where it's much more explicit. I'd love to show you both of these, but I really like these.
What does she need?
Well, she needs a stroke assessment.
Yes. More than that. What's her endpoint today, do you think?
Well, it's going to be...
Where's she going to be on the evening? Under the care of the... And is there anything you can conceive of that is likely that is going to change that outcome other than your failure to repair?
So very, I love it. Is there anything you can conceive of other than your failure to refer? But it's that kind of, you know, he's had a no previously when he said he wants a CT scan, and it's no, basically get the right answers. Anyway, I won't tell you more. I really like those extras. But I just want to show you this very last organisational one, just because I'm obsessed by how organisational stuff shows in data. I just want to show you this particular extract about how it's done in terms of time. And then I'm going to move on to the
next one. Tick-tock.
Yes.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Depending on how quickly they do.
So the point I want to make with that is he actually just says, out of nowhere, tick-tock, I'm looking at the time, and he looks across the clock. But what I was interested when I saw it was what she says, which is just yes. She knew. She knew exactly what he was talking about. It's so interesting. That clock is so prevalent in terms of what we're going to do. So just to bring it together, so I think there's talk about disposals, which are initiated by consultants generally, and the juniors are responding in a variety of different ways. But they're not. It's not just passive. They are responding in lots of different ways. They're trying to show their knowledge as well as maybe even trying to subvert what's, you know, get it really clear what's actually happening here, why it's moving on at that particular point. And they are active in this way. They've become, you know, there's a whole continuum of the way in which they do it. Although it's done quite carefully given the organisational structure. Education is integrated or can be explicit. And I think it's quite interesting to see how the conversation differs between, we've got some with juniors just talking to each other, what do we do, and those. I think that's, and it can be, as I say, very explicit. It was only that lead consultant that acted in quite that way. We can do it with another person as well, this kind of give me the right answer. Very pedagogic kind of way of moving forward. And there is orientation to wider structures, to guidelines on appropriate referral, discharge, prescribing. To just try and bring it together, there's this really delicate interactional work around this introduction and construction of the disposals for all kinds of reasons going on in terms of education and organisational goals and the point at which it's done and what information they've got to try and do this and what's summed up. There really is evidence of the education going alongside the service delivery, and there is that kind of tension between it and how the balance works. And certainly in evidence in the talk of orientation to both local, institutional and structural processes and constraints in terms of management of time, referral, guidance, guidelines, all those kind of things that you can see both explicitly and implicitly in the talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Great, thank you very much. So time for observations, queries, questions. Yes, Lee.
Thanks very much, Fiona. That's very interesting. For extract 9 and 10, I've seen it's like a common feeling that in hospital the senior doctor often will grill a junior doctor, and they are allowed to grill the junior doctor because it's a serious life and death matter. So they treat it very seriously.
Mm.
A lot of pressure and tension going on there. I think it's not easy for a junior doctor to venture some different opinion, like extract 3. You say this is a junior-initiated disposal. It can also be a misalignment with the prior senior doctor's disposal of sending this this patient home. So it's a lot of hesitation going on first, and particularly the final comment, I wouldn't feel comfortable with this woman going home. So it's misalignment and it's done very subtly here.
I don't know, why do you say misalignment there? Because actually there isn't any, the junior hasn't, the consultant hasn't said that the person will or won't be sent home. What I was interested in is the fact that the junior brought it in, and I haven't given very much on it. The junior hadn't actually raised the issue of what we're going to do with it. So I don't know, it's why do you say, I'm just interested in why you say it's misalignment.
Yeah, there isn't much a disposal exhibit in this exchange.
Yeah. Okay.
So I suppose the senior saying, are the family looking after her or suggesting something? And the next turn, the junior, said, it's like blocking a disposal option of the
yeah, okay, yeah, I see, you're right, yeah. So I think it was a kind of, can the family just do it? Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's a, yes, I see what you mean. So it could have, I think, yeah, so the consultant's going for the family looking after her, as opposed to, and they're saying, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that, yeah. I wouldn't think about it, definitely, and think about how it's said, but that's a really nice option to think about, whether they're going for the community or they're thinking.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lynn.
Yes, question here.
Hi, thank you very much. Actually, I've seen some of this data before that Caroline presented, and it's always so different seeing it. It's just really interesting what the difference between the visual presentation and the written presentation is. And the difference that really struck me was the computer. Because, yeah. I mean, the point that didn't come out so much, but is a kind of obvious point in a way, it's really hard to pin down the decision making.
Yeah, not very much so.
You know,
very
like, where is the, at what
when?
Point is
yeah.
the decision made?
Absolutely.
You know, because that's what
yeah.
is also a pedagogical aim, that the young doctors are learning to make decisions. But when I saw the computer, I wondered whether it's actually the action of writing something on the computer, which is the disposal. So how I guess it's also a kind of methodological point, how that sort of gets, because that's the sort of action with the computer and all its other affordances and networks and God knows
yeah.
what's going on, how that also becomes part of the analysis.
No, it's really, really interesting. I mean, we came up, at first it was about the decision making,
yeah.
but actually as a team we've really struggled with it, as other people are struggling with solid decision making. And actually, I'm really uncomfortable with saying there is a decision at any point. I can't identify them. And so, which is why I moved to this idea of what is the disposal, what's the talk about disposal.
Mm.
And the point at which disposal happens is really hard as well, because there is, you could count it in terms of when it's ticked off on the computer, but often what actually happens is it goes on to written notes. We don't have access to those or access to the computer. But they're I'm interested in that transition. So I thought the best way to look at it is that transition point. So looking at it in the talk. But you're, I mean, all that you said is absolutely right. It's really, and the computer's a pair of hands. But yeah, it's. Charles.
Oh, sorry, Alison.
That's all right.
Alison.
Thank you. Fiona, you spoke very interestingly about the kind of the four-hour time pressures
yes.
that constrain these individual sequences. But I wonder if there's any kind of orientation to longer-term temporal aspects, in the sense that at the beginning, these junior doctors kind of are at the very beginning of their training. So there comes a point where legally the next week they're going to be doing this on their own. And I wonder whether there's any orientation to that in terms of how directive the consultants are towards disposal.
I mean, I think there is to some extent, but that what's interesting is what you just said about they're legally going to be doing it on their own, because mostly they don't do it on their own. Mostly, and I was really surprised by that, what happens in A&E is most of it, the vast majority is passed through a consultant, which is the expectation that it will. And it also depends on who's on duty. So certain consultants insist it goes through them, and also when certain consultants are the lead consultant, the juniors pass it through another consultant because they don't want that kind of discussion about what's happening if they've got it wrong. So there is a difference, I think, to some extent about how they shift towards it, but often they don't look that different because the consultants feel they have to have that sign-off. I mean, I think there's a really interesting conundrum in this, which is that I got called in by, this research came because a consultant who I'd worked with in the past contacted me and said, we've got real problems. Junior doctors can't make decisions, and we're having to support them all the time, and, you know, what can we do about it? I want to psychologically do a psychological profile on juniors to see what the problem is. And I said, well, I'm not your woman for that. However, if you'd like to do something, you know, in this, I can examine it interactionally and see what's happening. And then when we went in, this is what we found, was that actually it's not so much the juniors pushing for assistance, it's the fact that it's the consultants who are insisting that it goes through them. And that is to do with, I think that's to do with organisational pressures, that they are responsible. And they were feeling very, very under pressure from the organisation, from the managers. They had a faster, safer week while we were doing the data collection. I have never seen such stressed clinicians in my life. Even easygoing ones who were generally quite happy were so and I spoke to one of them about it and said, what's going on? And he said, this is just hideous. They're not here to make this worse. They're here to just check out whether I'm doing anything wrong. It's just awful.
I think we'll have to stop it there. So thank you once again. Thank you. And we've had the opportunity.